About 30 members of the Treasury Department today spearheaded a rally outside of the Earl Cabell Federal Building.
If you catch a cracker lighting a torch to any black church, we are to send them to the cemetery.
The Klan is not the one that went over to Greenville and burnt the church.
Nothing good can come of it. They won't listen to any outsider.
The infection causes immediate respiratory failure, and scientists claim that mutations are now transmittable between humans.
Today is Friday, April 21st, 2017, and you're listening to A Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio, a podcast of political and social commentary for the radical left, an audio attack on the carefully crafted delusions of establishment reality with ideas, discussion, and music. Thanks for listening, but don't forget to think.
I tell you, this new rough and tough administration is really shaking things up. Really taking a new path here by continuing the exact same policy of the previous administration in demonization of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. When our own government consistently attacks those that shine a light on the truth, what does that tell you about our government? But here in the richest, smartest, greatest, most powerful nation on the planet, our government can't seem to pull Big Oil's hand out of its ass. French election coming up beginning Sunday for the first round, but there is a star in that election, kind of like the sort of star we saw here in the US, but he has a much better chance of actually making a difference. European media is actually covering him. It's crazy, right? A popular candidate with a populist message actually getting media exposure? It's almost like those nutty French people want their citizens to be able to make informed decisions so they can select the right person for the job. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of A Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio. As always, I'm your host, Richard Waite. And so we talked before about finding a groove for AMAV and looking for a kind of a standardized format that still has some room for adjustment depending on what's going on currently in the world. And I made an executive decision regarding A Mostly Accurate View, and I'm going to keep doing it as a personal project. Stormy may pop in here and there when she wants to, but she and I are going to work on a new project that is a joint venture for the two of us, and that's what she and I will mainly be working on when we work together. However, AMAV is going to stick around for a while. And I really like doing these shows, so I'm going to keep doing them. Hope that's okay with you all. However, that doesn't change the fact that I need to figure out a couple of things about AMAV, not the least of which is how I can do AMAV and some of the other projects I've been working on and still be able to pay bills. So sometime in the near future, you may start seeing ads in the sidebars and footers of the website or affiliate links or maybe even audio ad roll on the podcast. I'm not really sure yet. We'll see when we get there. It's not going to happen yet. I'm going to look into it. But I don't really want to make any money off of my content. I want all of my content to remain free for all. And I'm going to continue to do that. I'm going to provide it free. I'm going to produce it and I'm going to provide it free. You're not ever going to have to pay to read anything on A Mostly Accurate View or to hear any podcasts or anything like that. You're never going to have to pay for that. But in order to be able to provide that content for free, I've got to be able to get some revenue from somewhere. And so advertising is probably going to be the answer for that. And I still got to build up the audience a little bit. You guys are out there and I appreciate you. And, you know, thank you very much for your support so far. Numbers are still building a little bit and that's awesome. But I'm gonna look at, Patreon, however you pronounce it. I'm gonna look at that as well. Maybe put a PayPal donate button on the website. Like I said, you know, some people charge for their content, or like they'll give you some content for free, but other stuff, if you want, you know, the extra whatever, you got to pay for it and this, that, and the other. And I guess, I mean, that's fine for them, but I mean, it kind of, it's bullshit. I'll never do that. Unless like, okay, if I write a book or something, you know, that's a little different. But like, as far as, you know, the podcast or any blog articles and everything, I'm never going to charge for any of that. If it gets to the point where I can't afford to do a Mostly Accurate View anymore without having to charge for my content, then I'm just going to fucking stop doing it, because I'm not ever going to charge for that. So rather than doing that, I'm going to look for other ways to bring in some sort of revenue so that I can continue to do this and pay my bills. At least I'll look for other ways to get revenue until the systemic oppression of capitalism has crumbled and money isn't important anymore. But until then, we live in a system where I do actually have to pay for necessities, and web hosting costs money too. Internet connection, all that. So it is what it is. Another thing I need to look at as far as AMAV goes is the formatting. So I sat and I thought about the things that are most important to me personally when it comes to scrutiny of the current state of the world we live in. And I narrowed it down to three general things. One, the evils of capitalism. Two, supporting environmentalism, which includes opposing environmental destruction. And three, fighting fascism. So each show, I'm going to try to have three different topics of conversation that'll fit into those three categories, one for each category. Now, those are pretty broad categories, and so I did that intentionally, obviously, so I can have some wiggle room. And sometimes I'll have other things that I just have to talk about that might not fit into one of those categories. Although, kind of to be fair, capitalism covers everything, really, but you'll see what I mean throughout the next few shows. You'll understand what I'm getting at with that. But there's a reason why I made a distinction between those three things. So with all of that being said, I'm going to go ahead and get into the first of those three. We need to discuss something very, very, very important. And yes, this is going into the capitalism category. And it might not start out that way, but you'll understand. So we need to talk about WikiLeaks again. And we need to talk about Julian Assange and what's going to happen with him. So you may have heard CIA Director Mike Pompeo attacked WikiLeaks last week. He called them a non-state hostile intelligence agency. Now, this comes at a time when there is a deep, deep witch hunt going on, looking for leakers within the CIA regarding the Vault 7 releases from WikiLeaks. For those who don't know, the Vault 7 releases show pretty much the entire cyber warfare capabilities of the CIA. So they're definitely looking for the person to leak that shit. And it's not just in the CIA either. We got reports surfacing that the German Chancellery is being investigated by prosecutors in Berlin regarding the documents that WikiLeaks published last year. It's definitely last year. WikiLeaks published some documents regarding the collaboration between the U.S. National Security Agency and the German BND, which stands for something that I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but it's basically their version of the NSA. But strangely, this attack on WikiLeaks and Julian Assange from Pompeo is a complete 180 for him. That's very strange for a politician. On July 24th, 2016, when he was still just a lowly member of the House of Representatives here in the U.S. Congress, Pompeo tweeted that anybody who needed further proof that, quote, the fix was in from President Obama on down, which I'm assuming he meant in regards to the 2016 election, anybody who needed further proof of that need only to look at the 19,252 emails from the DNC that WikiLeaks had just published. Now, in his tweet, he actually put that exact number. He was a big fan of WikiLeaks and their efforts at that point. Now, since someone leaked documents to WikiLeaks implicating the CIA in some extremely illegal and extrajudicial activities, he wants to take a strong stance on Assange, and kind of that's kind of understandable. All right. You know, when he made that first tweet, he was not the director of the CIA. And now he is. And so but honestly, making the attack on Assange really isn't necessary. It's once again shooting the messenger. It's like the guy who gets caught cheating and then gets mad at his wife for looking through his phone. The find the person in the CIA that's leaking. Sure, I can understand that completely. That's interdepartment. That's, you know, internal, something internal that you can handle, that you need to handle. But going after Assange and WikiLeaks for publishing information, it's not only nonsensical, it's very, very dangerous. We'll get to that in a second. All right, so Pompeo, so he blasts Assange in this way, and so he called WikiLeaks a non-state hostile intelligence service, often abetted by state actors like Russia. That's what he said. To which Assange replied with calling the CIA a state non-intelligence agency, which produced Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Iraq, Iran, and Pinochet. Funny. It's pretty funny. And it's funny because it's true. So Pompeo blasts Assange, right? And now the Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the Department of Justice are reportedly preparing to file arrest warrants for Julian Assange, which is really weird. I don't know how much you all might know about the history of WikiLeaks, but it was founded in 2006. And it was leaking documents as early as that, but it didn't really get any attention, any real attention anyway, until 2010 when the Chelsea Manning files started coming out. Now, at that time, Eric Holder was the attorney general under Obama, and as much as Obama likes to prosecute whistleblowers, Eric Holder and the Department of Justice couldn't see any clear path to charging Assange with anything. Now, I'm not foolish enough to believe that this would have stopped Obama from getting Assange and putting him on a plane with no declared flight path, and suddenly nobody's seen or heard from Julian in weeks or months, or now it's been years. If he had the ability, if he had the chance to do that, he most certainly 100% would have. I believe that with all of my heart. Julian Assange has been lucky enough to find sanctuary and asylum in certain places and avoid that very fate. But as far as an actual public legal avenue for doing something to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, Obama and Eric Holder and Department of Justice at that time, they didn't have one. There was no legal avenue for them to do this. Well, that hasn't changed. There's no legal avenue for this to happen. The only difference is now, who do we have in the administration? So we've got good old boy Jeff Sessions, who is so brilliant that he doesn't even know that Hawaii is one of the United States. And he also thinks that marijuana is as bad as heroin. And he doesn't believe that he's a fucking racist scumbag. This complete fucking genius has somehow done what the administration before him couldn't. And he found some sort of loophole in the First Amendment that will allow him to charge Assange with, well, I'm really not sure what, because I couldn't find any actual charges. There's nothing, everything I found just said charges, nothing listed. No. Well, we're going to charge him, or looking at charging him with that, or could be this, could be that, just said charges. But Sessions also said that arresting Assange is a priority. So they're going to find something, some way, some loophole, some weird thing that they're going to be able to say, oh, well, he's not covered by the First Amendment because of this. And they're going to go after him. Honestly, I think that the avenue they'll probably go down is the fact that A, Assange is not a U.S. citizen, B, WikiLeaks servers are not hosted in the U.S., and therefore C, he is not covered under the First Amendment. That's what I think they're going to go with. We'll see. So Pompeo, CIA Director Pompeo, is now claiming that WikiLeaks directed Chelsea Manning to intercept specific information. So this is another avenue that they could go down by saying that it's a hostile entity. It's a hostile intelligence agency that just doesn't happen to have a state attached to it, but does work for Russia and will do work for the highest bidder. So they're a mercenary. They're a mercenary intelligence agency, blah, 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 blah. But my question for Pompeo is how, pray tell, did WikiLeaks know exactly what information they wanted Manning to intercept? And how exactly did they direct Manning to do so? You see, if WikiLeaks knew that there was this certain information that they wanted, wouldn't that mean that they already had the information and didn't need Manning to do a goddamn thing? Jesus fucking Christ, the lack of logic and critical thinking is astounding. And we're basing legal proceedings and arrest warrants and U.S. fucking policy on shit like this, on morons like fucking Mike Pompeo. So a few short months ago, right, the Republicans loved Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And now Trump, or at least his administration, but he isn't stopping it, has done a complete 180, and they're looking for ways to charge Assange with publishing leaked documents all the way back to 2010. But honestly, that's no real surprise either, really, because even if we ignore the Trump administration flip-flopping on literally everything and the hypocrisy shown in general by Trump and his cabinet, it really isn't a surprise to see opportunistic behavior coming out of the White House or any branch of the government, really. And it's not even restricted to Trump and his administration. All politicians are extremely opportunistic. Just listen to them, watch them. It's all pretty standard. And honestly, on a side note, thank God for how contentious this election cycle was, because if it was a regular boring ass election with two establishment candidates, nobody would even be paying attention right now. This election cycle woke people up, and the establishment is having a real tough time trying to put us back to sleep again. But that's not even why this is a big deal. That's not even really the problem. I mean, politicians who say one thing and do another, that's definitely a problem, but it's not a new problem, and it's not surprising at all. What the real problem here is the fact that if this goes through and charges are filed, this is going to completely shred the First Amendment. The freedom of the press is going fucking bye-bye. And neoliberals like Keith Olbermann are ecstatic about it because they're mad that their queen lost to the orange Mussolini, but their support of any effort to get Assange out of spite because of their disappointment is a big fucking mistake. The thing is, WikiLeaks is a publisher. They don't hack. Okay. The hacking, the breaking through firewalls and skirting security, the hacking, that is illegal, technically. The stealing of the information is illegal, technically, depending on which statute you look at. That's one of the things that Hillary Clinton should have been charged with, is removing documents from their I can't remember the exact language in the statute. I'm not going to look it up right now. But removing secured documents, sensitive information from a secured location, removing them technically is breaking the law. But publishing things are most certainly not against the law, and in fact are protected by the First Information. And WikiLeaks is a publisher. They don't hack. They don't remove information from anywhere. They don't steal anything. They publish information that's given to them by whistleblowers, by leakers, by hackers. Publishing information that holds a public interest, such as the U.S. government spying on its own citizens and literally everybody in the entire world, or perhaps the true thoughts and motives behind the facade of a political candidate and her campaign. Publishing information like that is what journalism is supposed to be. And as I've already pointed out a million times by now, when WikiLeaks was publishing information on Bush and Cheney and the Iraq War and Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay, Assange was the darling of the liberals and Republicans hated him. And then, when the shoe was on the other foot and WikiLeaks was publishing information about the Democratic Party and the Hillary Clinton campaign, the exact opposite happened. And the liberals hated him and the Republicans loved him. Sean Hannity interviewed him a couple of times and he had previously called for his arrest. So what does that tell you about our media? What does that tell you when our own corporate media has published leaked information, but they think they're going to get away with doing it under protection of the First Amendment, yet they support going after Assange for doing the exact same thing? And the media, journalists, need to take a big fucking step back and realize what this is going to do to their own abilities to publish things if it goes through. Now, the corporate media isn't really concerned about financing because multinationals own and operate the media, and they're nothing but propaganda outlets anyway. They're supporting this attack on WikiLeaks because, unlike the corporate media, WikiLeaks releases all of the information they have, and they don't do a bunch of spin on it. They release everything in a searchable database, and they let people scour that database. They let people see the actual source information. Now, if you pull up any article from the Washington Post or the New York Times or any video from CNN or MSNBC or Fox, and you have a real good chance of reading or hearing something along the lines of sources close to the department say, or our sources have indicated, without revealing who or what those sources are. Now, I am not against journalists concealing their sources so those sources can avoid any consequences for giving journalists pertinent information. Keeping sources concealed is important to true journalism because if sources are revealed and they face consequences, it'll make potential future sources think twice about passing along any information, which is in the government's best interest. That's their goal, and I guess I understand that, but that's the point. It should be the media's goal to pass along information to the public, whether the government likes it or not. And that's what WikiLeaks does. So, supporting the efforts to go after Assange and WikiLeaks is, in effect, supporting any future evidence to prosecute media outlets and journalists who publish information that the U.S. government would rather the public not see. And that, my friends, completely shreds the protection of the free press outlined in the First Amendment. Now, prosecution, a successful prosecution, that is, the judge could always throw out the case because it's unconstitutional, or but plenty of things can happen. But a successful prosecution of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange sets an extremely dangerous precedent for all media, but especially for independent media. See, that precedent that neolibs and plenty of establishment media pundits are supporting because it's going after a publisher they don't like could ultimately be turned around and used on them or on other journalists that they do like. And that spells disaster. Now, I don't care what your opinion of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange is. Love them, hate them, don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. Regardless of your own personal feelings on the matter, supporting the prosecution of a publishing entity is supporting the government censorship of the free press. And neolibs and neocons like to talk so much about how Russia and North Korea and these other places limit their media and control what their citizens can or can't read or hear and have no clue exactly how hypocritical they're being right now. It's fucking disgusting. Logic is non-existent in the U.S. right now, and it's all because of the Democrats running a shit candidate against a moron with a populist message. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that he isn't living up to his campaign promises, because that isn't what got him elected. His populist message, which was complete bullshit, is what got him elected. And the Democrats had a chance to beat him with a much more popular populist candidate with much better policies than any other major party candidate that ran. But instead, they tried to beat him with one of the most universally disliked candidates in history. And now they're mad at everybody and everything except themselves, including Julian Assange, because of this inconceivable amount of butthurt they're willing to allow yet more of our rights to be stripped down just to get some revenge. And all day long I hear, resist Trump, resist Trump. But then as soon as he does something that neoliberals like, I don't know, bombing people because neolibs love bombing people, or, I don't know, going after someone they point the finger at for their miserable policies and losses, ignoring the fact that those policies and losses have been a losing fucking strategy for 8 years, not just in 2016, and in fact, doubling down on those losing fucking strategies by having Tom Perez go out in public and say the exact same thing that Hillary Clinton was saying, Trump sucks, we're not Trump, we're not Republicans, they all suck, and we don't, so vote for us. And when the voting record stands to show that the Democrats, by and large, actually do suck, and the only thing that they're really good at is bowing down to their corporate donors and letting Republicans walk all over them and losing fucking elections, and instead of doing some self-criticisms, the Democrats would rather ignore all those, ignore their failings, ignore their faults, blame everyone and everything that they can, sexism, Bernie Bros, the Russians, and Julian Assange. And then the second Trump does something they're like, they're all there, you know, yeah, bomb those brown people. Yeah, go get Assange. Yeah, America. Oh, wait, we're Democrats. Excuse me, I meant America. Sorry, my true colors were showing for a second. And then they wonder why the fuck they lost and why they keep losing. But back to the main point. See, the purpose of the media once upon a time was to keep the public informed. They did a thing that's called investigative journalism. It's where they had people called journalists that did investigations into things. And they would uncover things and report back to the public what they found. Now, since the 1996 Telecommunications Act signed into law by none other than neoliberal poster boy Bill Clinton, corporations own all of your news. Every major news outlet, every magazine, newspaper, major online publications, major cable news channels, every single one of them is owned by one of six multinational corporations. And the only truth you hear is the truth that those corporations want you to hear. And it's so fucking spun out of the realm of reality that it doesn't even resemble the truth anymore. None of the journalists employed by these major news media outlets do any sort of investigative journalism anymore. There are no long-form articles. There are no in-depth interviews released in full. They all get cut to complete shit so that a particular narrative can be painted. And if you see a 30-minute interview, the actual interview was 3 hours long, guaranteed. Now, all the real journalists work for independent media outlets because they either can't get work at major media corporations because they don't want to just read off approved talking points, or they don't want to work for major media corporations because they don't want to just read off approved talking points. Bill O'Reilly had a segment on his show that he literally called Talking Points. And everyone thought that was just a fine little fancy name for this. It's just some talking points. And I'm real glad that asshole is gone. I just wonder which network is going to pick him back up. I mean, you know it's coming. Come on. Some network or radio service or somebody somewhere is going to pick him up. And you know they are. He's probably already in talks. It'll be like, oh, okay, Bill, we can't pay you as much as Fox did yet. But look, all right, we'll give it about 6 months. We'll let Trump do some crazy shit. People will forget what went down with you. We'll put you back on the air. You build us an audience, get some sponsorships and some advertisers, and we'll start paying you the big bucks again. And he's going to do it. He's going to take that 6 months. He's going to write himself a little book, and then he'll publish it right before he goes back on air. He'll push that book for the first few weeks. They'll herald it as a triumphant return of a media legend, and he'll get right back in the saddle again. I would put money on it that these talks are going on literally right now. But again, I digress. So major media outlets don't have a problem with going after Assange, because when he discloses all of the source information, not his sources, not the leakers or the whistleblowers, but his source information, he legitimizes everything that he does and shines a big, bright spotlight on the fact that the corporate media are paid talking stooges that don't do actual journalism, but only say on air what they are paid to say. It's pretty funny how the government wants to go heighten tensions with Russia, and Maddow happens to say Russia every 15 seconds on her show. But did the media want to cover it when WikiLeaks revealed that Tulsi Gabbard was basically punished by Clinton allies when she came out in support of Bernie Sanders? No, because that would shine a light on the truth of the matter. Did they want to cover it when Chuck Schumer and the rest of the Democrats came out to say that Gabbard should be primaried because of her questioning the U.S. military action in Syria? No, because it would highlight the warmongering corporatist centrist stance of the Democratic Party and how they always follow their donors' directions. And yes, they get a lot of money from defense contractors, just like the Republicans do. Fucking resist, but only when it suits the needs and narrative of the Democratic Party. We've talked before about how the corporations control our media, right? And they control our government, which means that our media, the major corporate media, not independent media, it's important that we make the distinction between the two. So our major media, since the government is controlled by corporations, and our media is controlled by corporations. So basically the corporations are our government because the government is controlled by the corporations. So the corporations are our government. And since corporations are our government and they own the media, our media is de facto state-run media. And this is why they don't have a problem with the DOJ or the CIA going after Assange. Assange shows the corporate media for what they are, and the public loses faith in them when that happens. So having a precedent set to prosecute independent media and publishers and journalists that disseminate information that the government corporations don't want out there is a great plan for them. And they are literally paying so-called journalists to say that this is a great idea. And those so-called journalists are so greedy, and they want the money so bad that they are actually going on air and supporting something that can be used against them if they cross the wrong person. And corporate media outlets have no dog in this fight. They control the government, and they'll never let anything happen to their media outlets. What this does is it sets the groundwork for an all-out assault on their competition. Now, there are some independent media outlets out there who really don't do anything except parrot what they hear on mainstream media. Those guys are pretty much safe. And they would be able to say, hello, one independent media right here, and they're saying the same thing that, the corporate media is. So, I mean, you know, hey, you could trust us, guys. Now, there's some independent media outlets out there that I don't particularly agree with. There are some out there who are strictly clickbait tabloid garbage. But I don't want to see any of them shut down by any sort of government censorship. That is hugely problematic for any of us. I don't mean any like people doing podcasts or I mean any of us as in people. Any U.S. citizen. That is a huge problem for any U.S. citizen. Now, these powers are not, they're going to be coming from, not from any law written or amendment passed. It's going to come from capitalist corporate overlords who are going to direct bought politicians in the White House and in Congress who they should go after with these new powers. And as long as those capitalists keep pumping money into the pockets of those politicians will keep doing exactly as they're told. And this is the real problem with capitalism. It isn't just about the money and the greed, although that's a big part of it. Now, capitalists are about acquisition and oppression, getting everything they can and still wanting more. Now, money buys power. So they get as much money as they can because that gives them more power, more control, more ability to determine how the lives of billions of people will be lived. And this is just another step in that direction. Now, did you hear me when I said this is fascism? I didn't, but it is. And it's also capitalism. And capitalism is fascism. Late stage capitalism leads to fascism. And we're seeing that right fucking now, because neolibs are so pissed off that their queen lost that they're supporting the very actions that are going to bring fascism to their fucking doorstep, and they're too goddamn butthurt to notice or care. There is literally only one direction we can go in to stop this constant march toward disaster, and that is the direction towards some form of socialism. Would I like it to be a complete shift over into that direction? Absolutely. Of course I would, but I'll take what I can get in the meantime. But right now we're going in the complete opposite direction of that. We're going towards the fundamentalism, the fascist, the right wing authoritarian. It's the opposite direction that we need to be going in. All right, quick break. And when we get back, we're going to look at some advances in environmental technology that once again shows how much the U.S. is under the control of the big oil companies. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere unless you're a climate denier. And in that case, you can go ahead and fuck off somewhere. All right, be right back. Welcome back. Real quick, I just wanted a quick side note regarding the last segment. Something I should have said before went to break. Something that I need to point out, because if I don't, I know I'm going to hear about it later. I'm going to hear from somebody somewhere. Someone's going to, you support the First Amendment when it comes to someone you like, but you don't support it when it comes to speech you disagree with, like Richard Spencer or Milo Snuffleupagus. You're a hypocrite. Okay, well, some of you already know what I'm going to say to that, but some of you might not have listened to some of my older shows, so I'll spell it out for you real quick. I am 100% in defense of the First Amendment for all people, for all media outlets, for everyone, everyone. Because if you read the goddamn amendment itself, it specifically states that the First Amendment prevents Congress from making any laws that abridge those rights. The First Amendment prevents government censorship of speech or press. And I don't care what any person's, not even a fucking Nazi scum, when it comes to that, if the government can say that one person can't say or write something, they can determine what anybody can say or write, which means they can determine what you can read or hear, and that is a huge fucking problem. So for all the constitutional conservatives out there, or the people who think that supporting Trump simply because he's the president makes you patriotic, I got news for you. This dude's administration is about to try to shred the First Amendment, and when they do that, everything else is now fair game. Here's a nice little thought for you. If they discover that they can shred the First Amendment, what do you think they're going to do to the Second Amendment? Now, some of you know, I was very anti-gun not too long ago, and I have completely flipped my stance on that. Due to various discussions that I've gotten into, different things that I've read, different observations of my own, and just critical thinking, I am 100% on the other side of the spectrum when it comes to guns now. Yes, I do believe there should be some reasonable regulation, but I think the citizenry needs to be armed, well armed, and trained in how to properly use and care for firearms. I also think that getting extensive training in hand-to-hand combat is not an awful idea. And I think the citizenry needs to practice military-style maneuvers. I am not saying revolt. Let me throw this disclaimer in there right now. I am not saying, let's go overthrow the government right now. I'm not saying that. I'm only saying that if you're not prepared when it goes down, you will wish that you were. Now, as far as why I believe that we have a social responsibility to fight against fascism and against fascist speech in the streets, well, I've gone over that. Go listen to some of my past shows. Chances are you'll find one where I talked about it at length. But I'll make the quick point that citizens fighting fascism in the streets is exactly what the Second Amendment was written for. And the reason for fighting fascist speech is demonstrated by the current administration. Now, a fascist regime understands the need to control the public narrative by controlling the media. And that's what they're doing with Assange right now. Or attempting to, anyway. So, once they have that obstruction cleared, the obstruction of the First Amendment cleared away, and they can outright control every journalist and media outlet under threat of prosecution, the next step is to take away the citizenry's ability to fight back against the authoritarian fascist regime. So, funny, they always said, well, Obama's coming for our guns, but there's a real chance it's actually going to come from the far right instead. I know, from my cold dead fingers and all that. And trust me, when it comes down to it, they're not going to have any problem with doing that. So, when you support people in government and media going after Julian Assange, think about what you are supporting. And think about what that means for the entire country and really for the entire world. It isn't just about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. It's about the ruling class tightening their grip on the working class and digging their heels in even further. Watch out what you support. Watch out who you support. And for fuck's sake, think critically about why you support them. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Never, ever forget that. All right, moving on. So, if you are a climate denier, you either already left or you were never listening to this in the first place, and frankly, I don't really give a shit. But if you are a climate denier and you're still here, I guess just ignore the next segment like you ignore all of the science out there that says you have no idea what you're talking about and climate change is real and it is accelerated by human behaviors. But if you aren't a climate denier, thank you for understanding what not only all of the science, but the Earth itself is telling us. And also, we need to do more. It is completely logistically possible to switch from dirty fossil fuel to 100% clean, green, sustainable, and renewable energy sources for every bit of our energy needs around the world today. We don't have to wait. And don't listen to these fucking assholes who tell you that it'll take away jobs. Or it just isn't possible right now. They're either lying to you or they're misinformed by the big oil corporations' propaganda. A green energy sector would create just as many jobs as would be lost by making that switch. From technology development to installation to infrastructure maintenance, oil creates jobs, then tell me why the Keystone XL pipeline is going to create 35 jobs. Not 350, not 3,500, 35. Sold our fucking soul for 35 fucking jobs. But that's a different discussion. I wanted to go into something here that adds more evidence that our energy policy in the United States is stupid and has been for a long time. We've seen tremendous evidence that 100% green energy is not only possible, it's already happening. In a lot of places, Germany at one point had so much green energy, they had to sell some of it off. I talked about this story. This was a couple months ago where they created so much energy from solar and wind that I think they were paying people to use it, if I'm not mistaken. I'll double check on that. But there was a Germany thing. And then we also talked about on another show, there was an entire island being powered by diesel fuel generators that is now completely running on Tesla technology. Also talked about Google and their initiative to go 100% green. And China even is investing billions into green technology over the next few years to power their country and deal with their smog problem. And you're telling me that the greatest and most powerful nation, the richest nation on the planet, can't do what these places are doing? Bullshit. That's big oil talking. And here's some more evidence for you. When it comes to agriculture, well, looky here. I found this article somewhere. I can't remember where. I think I shared it on the AMAV Facebook page. I'll double check, make sure it's there. But I found this article. It's a little older. It's from February of this year. It's from the World Economic Forum. And it talks about solar power and how it's being used in agriculture in some of the poorest parts of the world. That's the headline. Solar power is transforming the lives of some of the world's poorest farmers. And here we are in the richest country on the planet. And these dirt poor countries are doing more to fight climate change and pollution than we are. Go figure. So here's a little bit from the article. The author, whose name I am going to mangle right now, Marin Ahmed Mabub. I don't think I did too bad. He talks about a farming family he met on a trip he took to Bangladesh. He met a young man named Habibur. He was working in a rice field. This is what he says about it. Quote, "I learned that his life had not been easy. His father died when Habibur was around 4 years old and the family had no land. His young widowed mother started working as a day laborer to raise her only child. Habibur began working too in his mid-teens. Mother and son struggled, but they managed to save some money. They first bought a cow, and later Habibur leased land for rice cultivation. For rice cultivation, timely irrigation is vital. Even missing one day can severely affect crop quality and yield. Habibur and other farmers in his village depended on expensive diesel generators for irrigation. Accessing these was a challenge. Sometimes, Habibur had to spend days in the local bazaar to get the pumps. On top of the rent, he had to pay for the transportation and the diesel fuel. In October 2015, solar-powered irrigation reached Habibur's locality. The solar pump near his land now covers around 12 hectares of land and provides 500,000 liters of water daily. Habibur and 28 other farmers share the cost of a single irrigation pump that waters their fields. Their irrigation cost has dropped almost by half." The article goes on to talk about the positive effects that this technology is having on the lives of people living and working in Bangladesh, including freeing up their time for either more productive uses than standing in markets squabbling over pumps and diesel fuel, or to actually be able to take care of their families, like Habibur, who now gets to actually see his 8-year-old daughter once in a while. And unlike the U.S. government, which is run by people who take a shitload of money from giant oil companies and do nothing but their donors' bidding, the government of Bangladesh is seeing these positive effects and is actually encouraging expansion. Huh. It's weird. The government of Bangladesh has said that it is going to install 1,250 solar-powered irrigation pumps by 2018. Little more from the article. It says, "The low-cost technology is well-suited for the country's flat terrain and abundant sunshine. The Rural Electrification and Renewable Energy Development Project is piloting solar-powered irrigation solutions using a public-private partnership model. The implementing agency, Infrastructure Development Company Limited, channels grant and credit funding to the non-government organizations and private investors who install the solar pumps. So far, about 300 pumps are in operation, benefiting more than 8,000 farmers." 300 pumps. 8,000 farmers. "They are more affordable and easier to install than traditional systems. They have no moving parts, function without noise or pollution, and require little maintenance. Even better, the country will be able to reduce 5,000 tons of carbon emissions per year once all the 1,250 pumps are in operation. Today, Bangladesh spends around $900 million each year for 1 million tons of diesel fuel for irrigation." It's crazy. And this is in Bangladesh, but we can't do that here. We can't convert to 100% clean energy. It would take less than 1% of our land to set up a giant solar farm and power the entire country. And it's not just home and business electricity, but every single bit of energy we use would be supplied by that 1% of land. And we could put it out in the desert where nobody lives and run the entire goddamn country. Cars, buses, trains, everything on 100% clean energy. The only thing that I can't think of, and maybe this technology exists, or maybe someone's got a way to do it. Only thing I can't think of that we don't have the technology yet to do is fly planes without jet fuel. That's the only thing. But everything else that I can think of can be run on electricity, and it can all be powered by a solar farm that would take up less than 1% of the land in the U.S. But you got people saying that, well, it's just not feasible to do. Not yet. Bullshit. Of course it is. The entire infrastructure is already there with some modifications and upgrades. That same infrastructure could be used to run a solar power electric supply to the entire country from a solar farm in the desert. And really, honestly, what better place to put a solar farm than in the desert? I can't think of one. Or even major cities. Major cities could build smaller solar farms nearby to power certain areas. However we wanted to do it, it can be done. The only problem I see with that is like cities that often spend quite some time under cloud cover, like Seattle, might have an issue with that. But there's different ways, there's different methods of going about and doing this, and it can be done. The technology exists. We have a bunch of corrupt, easily bought politicians pushing for energy policies that benefit the big oil companies, because the big oil companies are the ones who pay those politicians to keep the fucking oil flowing. Like I said, every problem we have in the world can be traced back to capitalism. Every single one. Name one. Name any problem, any social issue, and I'll show you how capitalism either caused it or feeds off of it. Every single problem, including environmental destruction and the exploitation of our finite resources for profit. And there are solutions out there. There are ways to stop this shit, and it is possible. We can do it. It's been proven that we can do it. We're just too stubborn and love our dirty fucking fuel too much to actually do it. But we're gonna pay for that, and we're going to pay very dearly. It isn't just a shift in the Earth's climate. This is extinction event level shit. This is going to kill us all if we don't do something very, very soon. The end is extremely fucking nigh. Bernie wasn't kidding when he said that climate change is the number one threat to the world. There is no greater threat. You know, Islamic extremism. Yeah, that's awful. But compared to the number of people that climate change has already killed, not to mention the number of people it still has yet to kill, the terrorists don't fucking scare me. Famine, drought, strong storms, rising sea levels, that's the shit that scares me. Wars fought over clean water and people being murdered just for food, that scares me. This isn't something that we can ignore. This is something that we need an active push for. And we need to get the goddamn money out of politics so that we can get some people in the government who will actually fight for systemic change like this one. Or we need to just disband the government altogether and rebuild one that doesn't have these conflicts of interests all over the place. We need a council government, not this fake ass representative democracy we have now. The only people these politicians represent are their fucking donors. They don't represent you or me or the general welfare of the public. They represent their donors. And shit like this push for solar in Bangladesh, it just adds to the giant pile of evidence that this is the case. You know, when we have the ability and know-how, when we have the technology and the resources to make a complete switch to 100% renewable energy in this country, but we don't at the behest of the people who make billions in profit off of dirty fucking oil out of the ground. That right there tells you that this representative democracy only represents the people with enough money to buy off politicians. All right. I'm going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back talking about the rise of fascism. I know we touched on that in the first segment, but there was something else I wanted to get into regarding that, so stay right here. We'll be right back.
Your bullshit, just a poor excuse for you to use up all your bullets. How much money does it take to really make a full clip? 9/11 building 7, did they really pull it? And a bunch of other cover-ups. Your child's future was the first to go with budget cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the uppercut. The school was garbage in the first place, that's on the up and up. Keep you at the bottom, but tease you with the upper crust. You get it, then they move it, so you never keeping up enough. If you turn on TV, all you see is a bunch of what the fucks. Dude is dating so-and-so, blabbering about such and such. And that ain't Jersey Shore, homie, that's the news. And these the same people supposedly telling us the truth. Limbaugh is a racist, Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. That's why I ain't vote for him. Next one either. I'm a part of the problem. My problem is I'm peaceful, and I believe in the people. Yeah.
It's so loud.
Never heard it, but if we know better, then we probably deserve it. Jihad is not holy war, where's that in the worship? Murdering is not Islam, and you are not observant, and you are not a Muslim. Israel, don't take my side, cause look how far you've pushed them. Walk with me into the ghetto, this where all the kush went. Complain about the liquor store, but what you drinking liquor for? Complain about the gloom, but when you pick a broom up? Just listen in the pot, ain't gon' make it stop. A rebel in your doubts, ain't gon' make it out. If you don't become an actor, you'll never be a factor. Pills with million side effects, take them when the pain's felt. Wash them down with diet soda, killing off your brain cells. Crooked banks around the world would gladly give a loan today. So if you ever miss a payment, they can take your home away. Worse than all the violence. Fear is such a weak emotion, that's why I despise it. We scared of almost everything, afraid to even tell the truth. So scared of what you think of me, I'm scared of even telling you. Sometimes I'm like the only person I feel safe to tell it to. I'm locked inside a cell in me, I know that there's a gel in you. Consider this your belling out, so take a breath and hell a few. My screams is finally getting free, my thoughts is finally yelling down.
All right, welcome back.
So I want to talk about something that is important to the U.S., but it's important on a global scale. There is an election coming up, not in the U.S., but it is one that we will feel the effects here, depending on the results. So the French presidential election is coming up very soon. It starts on Sunday, April the 23rd. That's this Sunday. And France always has two rounds of their elections. It's not a perfect system, but it's far better than the one we have here. In the first round, people vote for the candidate that they really want to win. And there are actually five candidates running in France's election. There may be more like there were here in the U.S., and we only knew about two. Or four. Some of us knew about four. But there are five major candidates in the French election. So in the first round, the people choose the candidate that they really want to win. And then those votes are tallied. And then after that, there's a second round of the election where people choose between the two candidates who got the most votes in the first round. Now, that's not a perfect system, but it is a much better way of gauging the actual will of the people than the system we have here in the U.S. Now, some might say, well, we have primaries and then we have the general. Isn't that the same thing? No, it isn't. Because the primaries are to choose a party candidate and the general is actually for the seat. In France, all five candidates are running for the seat and people are able to choose from all five candidates. So in the first round, they're able to vote for the person they really want instead of the lesser of two evils or having to vote for someone simply to vote against someone else. Then in the second round, those people may have to vote for the lesser of two evils or vote against the candidate they really don't want to win. But overall, they were able to at least try to get their favored candidate into office in their first round votings. And if that candidate didn't get enough votes to get into the second round, well, then that candidate didn't have enough support. And that's that. It's a much better system than we have here. Personally, I still prefer ranked choice voting. And if you don't know what that is or the details of that, I suggest looking into it. It's the closest thing to a perfect voting system that I have seen. If there's a better one, let me know. But look into ranked choice voting. If you don't know what that is, it's a hell of a lot better than the first past the post voting system that we've got here. But even still, the two-round runoff system like they have in France, I wouldn't be opposed to that if we implemented it here because, again, it's far better than what we have here. And another thing, France's elections always take place on a Sunday. Most people are off of work that day, so they end up with a much higher voter turnout than we have here. It's funny how I hear of the people and by the people so much, but then we do everything we can to make sure as few people vote as possible. But enough about that. I wanted to talk about some of the candidates in the French election. There are five. But really, there are only two that I want to talk about. Now, polling shows that all five kind of have a decent shot at getting to the runoff. But with the Brexit vote and Trump's victory and unreliable polling, really anything is possible. This really is a wait and see type of situation, and all conventional methods of measuring public opinion before the election results come in are pretty much thrown out the window. But regardless, there are two candidates that I wanted to talk about. The first is Marine Le Pen. She's being called the French version of Trump. She's a far-right, xenophobic bigot who is running on much the same platform as Trump did. Her party is the National Front. I mean, come on. That right there tells you something. So her father was Jean-Marie Le Pen. And he was a politician with the National Front and the only National Front politician who ever made it to the second round. He's an outspoken racist, a convicted Holocaust denier, and his daughter is saying the same kind of shit, really, just against Muslims this time. But there's she's far more sinister in this because she's a marketing genius. After she took control of the party from her father, she rebranded it with a softer image, one that still had a they had a populist message, but only for French people. There's an ad I saw of Le Pen. It shows her in front of two different images of women's faces. The one on the left is a smiling, happy white woman with flowing hair, and the one on the right is a woman who is obviously meant to be a Muslim, so wearing a hijab. Hijab. How do you pronounce that anyway? Hijab. I just looked it up. It's hijab, so sorry for butchering that. Now I know how to pronounce it properly. So this ad, there's these two women's faces. One is the happy, smiling white woman. The other one's wearing a hijab. And in front of the white woman, it says, "This is France." And in front of the Muslim woman, it says, "This is not." Now, I don't know if that ad was paid for or approved by her campaign or party, but that doesn't really matter because that's her message. Trump didn't publicly approve of the ads made for him by white supremacists and anti-Semites, but they conveyed his message nonetheless, and this is no different. And let's not forget that one that he retweeted that had Hillary Clinton and the silhouette of the Star of David on it. And so there's that. All right, so now why is Le Pen an issue when the National Front has only ever had one politician ever make it to the second round? Well, because she's in the lead right now. She is a strong contender for the presidency, and even though French media pundits are saying that it's unlikely that she will win the second round, the media said the same thing here about Trump in both the primaries and the general. So you tell me what that means. She's a nationalist. She's a nationalist, a xenophobe, and a fascist in the making. And she's in the lead. And that spells big trouble. If she wins after the Brexit vote and everything going on with British Prime Minister Theresa May calling for a vote on Scotland, fascists almost won in Sweden. There's nationalism is all over the place in Europe. And if France goes in that direction, that could be a big, big indicator of an impending major, major problem in Europe. And we've already seen what's happening in Greece. And this is not going to help if she wins. The fascist movement will become that much bigger and that much more powerful from just this one election. And then there's this. Well, France has been plagued with terror attacks, including one that just happened yesterday. And of course, ISIS claimed responsibility. They claimed responsibility very, very fast, too, which leads us to believe that they knew that this attack was coming. Normally, it takes them about 12 hours to claim responsibility for an attack. This time, it was like 2.5 hours. So they had to have known it was coming. Now, the guy, the shooter, the terrorist attacker, he had actually spent time in jail on attempted murder charges, I believe, from 2005 he was convicted. Three attempted murder charges, two of them were on police officers. And then this attack where he opened fire on a police van and ended up killing one police officer. Now, Le Pen has taken a hard line on Islam, on immigration, minority rights, and this attack is probably not going to sway the public against that hard line. There have been like a dozen terror attacks in France in the past couple of years. Most of you will remember the nightclub shooting where like 100 and some odd people died, the Charlie Hebdo massacre. There have been others, but this one in particular was not so bad as far as deaths go. It was only one police officer was killed, and the shooter was killed, and two other police officers were wounded, and that's it. Now, I'm not saying it's not a big deal, because it is a big deal. Somebody died. And even if it was a cop, that's still awful for them and their families, and for that matter, even the shooter. All right, look, I know. People are going to say, well, he was a terrorist. He was shooting at cops. Of course he should die. And that's an understandable stance to have, but it's wrong. I don't want anyone to die. Now, in this case, it was unavoidable. The dude shooting at the cops, what do you think is going to happen? Of course he's going to get shot. Of course he's going to die. That's unavoidable. But there are different factors that caused this that can be addressed. But instead, people like Trump and Le Pen like to look at the symptoms as the objective to attack instead of the causes. And in fact, they do more to expand the causes while trying to attack the symptoms. And all it does is cause more death that doesn't really need to be caused. But regardless, only two people died. It was one cop and the shooter. So as far as the death toll goes, this really wasn't a terrible attack. Because it happened so close to the election, it could have far graver consequences. If this propels Le Pen even further in public opinion, she's going to be very hard to beat in the second round. And then we'll have a whole different slew of problems to square off with. Now, not the U.S. She and Trump will probably be buddies of a sort. But I mean for people in the global community that want to see an end to the capitalist oppression and hate and war and destruction. We are going to have a hell of a fight on our hands in Europe. And things are going to get worse here on that front, too. Don't be fooled. It will have effects here in the U.S. as well if she wins. But this is an election to watch very closely. Now, honestly, any of the other four candidates would be better than Le Pen when it comes right down to it. But they all have their issues. One of them's involved in a scandal where he was supposedly paying his wife to do a job that didn't exist. Another is a member of the incumbent party, and the current president, Holland, had a disastrous term. And even though that guy's polling strongly, he could lose to Le Pen following this attack. Another is a socialist who made a huge showing in his party's primary, but he's in dead last. But there is one guy, and in a perfect world, this is the guy who would win. He's basically France's version of Bernie Sanders, and I'm not the only one to have called him that. Now, he's much further left than Bernie is, but what people in the U.S. consider left-wing is actually centrist everywhere else in the world. So on the relative scales, Bernie is to American politics what this guy is to French politics. His name is Jean-Luc Mélenchon, and he's with Unbowed France, and the slogan of that party is "The Force of the People." He's actually basically a communist. No, not like Stalin, but in the truer socialist sense of the word, communist. Actually used to be part of the Socialist Party, and he's now running with the Unbowed France. So just a little bit about his stance. He wants to tax the fuck out of the rich. A full 100% on anybody making over 33,000 euros a month. He wants to raise the minimum wage to 1,300 euros a month. I do believe he also wants a universal income, if I'm not mistaken. He wants to renegotiate European Union trade treaties to, quote, remove the yoke of economic liberalism. I love that. He wants to dump 100 billion euros into green energy and completely get rid of nuclear power. And he wants to put the retirement age back at 60 and move to a 32-hour work week. Now he's seen a surge in the polls. He was in last place. Now he's in fourth and rising. A lot of this has to do with his powerful performance in the first debate. And he slammed the moderators of the debate for not grilling two of the other candidates on their legal troubles, including Le Pen. So, yeah, Le Pen is having some legal issues, apparently. But as we can see here in the U.S., when it comes to reactionary nationalist candidates, legal problems aren't really a big deal. But Mélenchon is coming up on the heels of the third place candidate, Fillon. And it's very possible he could overtake both and both the second and third place candidates and end up in the runoff against Le Pen. Now, I would rather that he ended up in the runoff with any of the other candidates, thereby ensuring that Le Pen never gets a chance to win the seat. However, I want to draw the parallel here of this hypothetical second round election between Le Pen and Mélenchon to what should have been the election here in the U.S. if the Democratic Party wasn't full of ignorant assholes. So we all agree that it should have been Bernie against Trump, and that Bernie would have demolished Trump, and we'd have President Sanders right now. That's what should have happened. And if the French election goes down like that, Le Pen versus Mélenchon, it'll be their version of what should have happened here. There is a major difference, though. Unlike Donald Trump, Marine Le Pen is a good politician. She knows what she's doing. She's riding the populist wave, and the Trump victory here gave that wave even more power. But Mélenchon is also a populist, and people are liking his message too. And I promise you this, if Mélenchon doesn't get in the second round, if it's an establishment neoliberal centrist shill instead, Le Pen is winning this, because that's what happened here. People all over the world, it's not just in the U.S., people all over the world are tired of being crushed by neoliberal economic and foreign policies. And a populist message is resonating across the entire globe, and establishment candidates are in the crosshairs. So if Le Pen gets into the second round and her opponent is anybody but Mélenchon, she wins. I promise you that. And then another powerful and wealthy country will have fallen into the hands of a proto-fascist. So, anybody listening in France, or if anybody listening knows anybody in France, tell them, vote Mélenchon in Sunday's polling. He needs support, and unless you want a much sneakier and smoother operator than Trump, but equally as horrific, sitting in the highest office in the country, this is the guy that you want. I promise you. All right. That's all I got for today. Thanks for joining. Hopefully I'll be able to get another episode up in the next few days. As always, you can tweet at me. That's at @mostly_accurate. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/amostlyaccurateview. You can visit us on the web, amostlyaccurateview.com, or email us, amostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. Look forward to talking to you guys again. Hit me up, talk to me, tell me something. Tell me what you thought, tell me what you like, what you dislike, tell me what you want me to talk about. And so I'll talk to you soon, and until then, as always, keep talking, keep thinking, and keep moving forward. Have a great day.
Darkness at the break of noon, shadows even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon. To understand, you know too soon, there's no sense in trying. As pointed threats they bluff with scorn, the suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece. The hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying. Temptation's page flies out the door. You follow, find yourself at war. Watch waterfalls of pity roar. You feel the moan, but unlike before, you discover that you just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear a foreign sound to your ear. It's all right, Ma. I'm only sighing. As some won victory, some downfall, private reasons, great or small, can be seen in the eyes of those that call to make all that should be killed to crawl, while others say don't hate nothing at all except hatred. Disillusion, words like bullets bark as human gods aim for their mark. Make everything from toy guns that spark to flesh-colored Christs that glow in the dark. It's easy to see without looking too far that not much is really sacred. Preachers preach of evil fates, teachers teach that knowledge waits can lead to $100 plates. Goodness hides behind its gates, but even the President of the United States sometimes must have to stand naked. Though the rules of the road have been lodged, it's only people's games that you got to dodge. And it's all right, Ma. I can make it. Advertising signs that con you into thinking you're the one that can do what's never been done, that can win what's never been won. Meantime, life outside goes on all around you. You lose yourself, you reappear, you suddenly find you got nothing to fear. Alone you stand with nobody near, when a trembling distant voice unclear startles your sleeping ears to hear that somebody thinks they really found you. A question in your eyes is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy and show you not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. Though the masters make the rules for the wise men and the fools, I got nothing more to live up to. For them that must bow down to authority that they do not respect in any degree, who despise the jobs, their destiny, speak jealously of them that are free, cultivate what they do to be nothing more than something they invest in. While some on principles baptized to strict party platform ties, social clubs in drag disguise, outsiders they can freely criticize, till nothing's helped you to idolize and say God bless him. While one who sings with his tongue on fire gargles in the rat race choir, bent out of shape from society's pliers, cares not to come up any higher, but rather get you down in the hole that he's in. But I mean no harm, nor put fault on anyone living in a vault. But it's all right, Ma, if I can't please him. Old lady judges watch people in pairs, limited in sex they dare, to tell fake morals, insult and stare. While money doesn't talk, it swears. Obscenity, who really cares? Propaganda, all is phony. Well, them that defend what they cannot see, with killer's pride, security, it blows their minds most bitterly. For them to think death's honesty won't fall upon them naturally, life sometimes must get lonely. My eyes collide head-on with stuffed graveyards, false goals I scuff at, pettiness which plays so rough. Walk upside down inside handcuffs, kick my legs to crash it off, say, all right, I've had enough, what else can you show me? And if my thought dreams could be seen, they'd probably put my head in a guillotine. But it's alright, Ma, it's life and life only.